Hello, everybody, and welcome to GeekWire. I am GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
And I'm Geek Life reporter Kurt Slusser.
We're coming to you from GeekWire in Seattle, where we report each day on what's happening around us in technology, science, and innovation. What happens here matters everywhere. And every week on this show, we talk about some of the biggest and most interesting stories we've been covering. Coming up this week, Microsoft weighs a purchase of TikTok with a September 15th deadline looming imposed by President Trump. We also take a walk through downtown Seattle, and we talk to various small businesses that are struggling to survive as major tech employers stay at home. And we'll talk about the big trend in micro schools and hear about a SOX startup screw-up in pivoting to make masks. Kurt, I'm glad to have you here on the show with me today, and we're missing Todd Bishop, our great colleague who's away on vacation. Thanks for sitting in.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is a first, you and I solo, so let's make Todd proud.
Absolutely. So let's start with probably the biggest news of the week, TikTok. I don't think many people saw this coming, that first the government would have proposed a ban of TikTok in the U.S., and then secondly, that Microsoft would swoop in potentially as some white knight to pick up the assets of TikTok, the giant social media company that has been growing very rapidly. Kurt, what were your initial thoughts when you saw this come to fruition?
My thoughts were, you know, on the heels of the big tech CEO antitrust meeting the week before last, I watched a lot of that and I thought, you know, Microsoft is kind of lucky here that they're not A, on this hot seat, and then B, that they just, you know, have nothing really to do with the social media game that Zuckerberg has to answer to and Google to an extent. To have that completely flipped on its head and to have them show up in discussions around what is essentially one of the most popular social video sharing apps at the moment, it was very surprising.
Well, that is a great point, because Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, was not invited to that congressional testimony. I'm sure he didn't mind missing out on that, but certainly threw himself back into the news a few days later with the TikTok. Somebody had a tweet, I can't remember who it was, but they were saying something along the lines, well, this will get you invited back next time if you try to a bid for TikTok. But the interesting thing here is that this is a big, big deal. I mean, and complex as well. And it's a fast-moving story as well, with two major governments, China and the U.S., a large technology company in Microsoft that's inserting themselves. It could, based on an analysis we did this week on GeekWire, be one of the largest acquisitions, perhaps the largest acquisition in Microsoft's history, supplanting the $26 billion that they paid for LinkedIn. And the other interesting thing here is that Microsoft, under the leadership of Satya Nadella, has really established itself as a cloud computing giant and enterprise software juggernaut. And getting into the social media game seems a little bit weird for a company like Microsoft. So I'm not sure how this is all going to play out.
Now, you mentioned LinkedIn, and I guess you could lump them into some sort of social site when you think about it, you know, the way people use that. Are there two entities further from each other than LinkedIn and TikTok when it comes to audience? I mean, I just think about the type of kids that I expect to see and the videos that are made on TikTok, and then the content that I see and share on LinkedIn. And it's, you know, that's not to say Microsoft can't diversify in such a way, but man, what a wide swath of audience participation that would be. And it speaks to a point that Bill Gates made this week when he was asked in an interview what he thought of everything. And one of the points he made was, I'm not the target audience. I have to go to my youngest daughter to even understand how the thing works.
Bill Gates's responses in that interview with Emily Chang, the Bloomberg technology reporter, it seemed like she caught him off guard, that he wasn't anticipating questions related to TikTok, and just really seemed to be stumbling through parts of that. What was your take since you wrote that story?
Yeah, I think Bill has sort of honed his pandemic, you know, sort of talking points for the last several months, and to be suddenly thrust into the conversation, a very politically charged conversation about TikTok and his former company, did catch him off guard. He was chuckling a bit. You know, he made the quip about his daughter. And then he said he's focused on his foundation in the pandemic. And while he may end up giving some advice, he's not at the center of that decision-making process.
who is at the center of that process is Satya Nadella, the Microsoft CEO. And I think this is going to be fascinating to see how this plays out with the clock ticking towards September 15th, the date that President Trump has imposed that an acquisition has to occur or the U.S. operations of TikTok would be shut down. The other interesting development that occurred this week is that there was a report out that Microsoft, which initially said that they were going to just purchase the assets of TikTok in the U.S., New Zealand, Australia, and Canada, came out and said, hey, actually, we think it might be better if we buy the whole thing. And so they were talking about buying the India and the European operations as well, which would make this an even bigger potential acquisition. TikTok does not have operations in China, where its parent company, ByteDance, is based. But this would make it perhaps a more digestible acquisition rather than trying to take pieces and parts of the company out of it, which is just a very complex deal. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out and if Microsoft really puts a foot forward in the social media space with TikTok. So we are going to be closely watching this story in the coming days as it develops. And that's it on the TikTok story. When we come back from a break, we're going to take a walk through downtown Seattle around the Zillow Group headquarters and see what life is like for many of the small businesses that are operating in the shadow of that tech giant.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to GeekWire. I am John Cook, GeekWire co-founder. I'm here with Kurt Schlosser, GeekWire reporter, and we are talking about the week's news. Kurt, we had the pleasure of working together on a story this week, and it was, gotta say, it was really fun, although it wasn't a very fun topic. I know both of us have lived in Seattle for more than 20 years. We are proud of our city, and we've both spent time kind of touring and hanging out around downtown Seattle amid the pandemic and seeing what life is like. And for us who've seen this city turn into this bustling kind of boomtown over the last 10 years, I got to say, I could not recognize the city when I was downtown this week preparing for this story. What have been your impressions of, as you've gone into downtown and seeing what life is like?
Yeah, the same. Pretty depressing. It's really easy to ride your bike downtown these days, especially at rush hour. I mean, I've never had such an easy time sort of getting around from one end of town to the other. And I did a ride a couple weeks ago where I went down all the way through South Lake Union and over toward the Spheres and back up to the market and then through Belltown. And there's nobody there. And this is such a weird juxtaposition from where we were just 6 months ago, where traffic and overdevelopment, if you will, affordability, all of these things were at the top of everybody's mind. And now we're wondering, is Seattle going to be okay? Downtown Seattle going to survive or look anything like it did 6 months ago?
Right. And that was kind of the premise of our story to set the stage here a bit. We came up with the concept of let's look at one kind of block or two or three block area around one of the major tech employers in downtown Seattle, which is Zillow Group, which has about over 5,000 employees worldwide, but about 2,700 employees in the Russell Investment Center, one of the large skyscrapers in downtown Seattle. And we talked to various business owners. We talked to the Downtown Seattle Association. We talked to Zillow about what life was like down there. And I got to say, one of the more depressing parts of the interview process is when I met with Drew Gillespie, who is the president of Pike Brewing. And they just opened up a week ago. They're a block and a half or so away from Zillow. Zillow had normally would have standing happy hours there on a weekly basis. And he's really struggling with how to go about opening his business and trying to figure out what life is going to be like at his restaurant and brewery. We've got a clip here from Drew.
It's how long can we hold on, right? All of downtown Seattle, my restaurant, I've got two restaurants. We had 91 employees. Now we're at 30. So it's how long can we hold on? You know, what we're all in now is not sustainable for the long term. But can we last 6 months? Can we last a year? How many restaurants will be here when they come back, if they come back? There's just so many unknowns, right?
Drew Gillespie, you know, he's in a tough spot at Pike Brewing. That's a longtime brewery down there. They rely obviously a lot on tourists that come over there from the market. There's, you know, hotel visitors that just aren't there right now. There's cruise ships that aren't docking. But you take away the 330,000 or so people that come into Seattle Monday through Friday to work, and that just can't be replaced. So a brewery like that that's situated right downtown isn't getting that kind of foot traffic from, say, the 88,000 residents who live down there. Like, say, a neighbor, you know, we've got a ton of breweries up here in Ballard where you and I live close to, and those breweries look like they're packed every weekend. I don't know that Pike is getting the same sort of traffic, or the restaurants and the other shops that are near where Zillow is.
Right. And speaking of one of those other shops near Zillow, we also interviewed the general manager of an Evergreen shop, which is the popular salad shop, which is a half block away from Zillow. And to give a sense of the impact on their business, the manager there told me on a normal weekday, they are doing about 400, 500 salads, with Zillow being the number one customer coming in during the lunch hour. And now they're struggling to get to 100 salads. So, I mean, just to put this in perspective, in terms of what it means when a company like Zillow pulls their workforce out of their downtown tower. And we should say Zillow recently said that they are going to allow their workforce to work from home indefinitely. So there's a chance that, you know, a percentage or a large percentage of those 2,700 employees might not even come back. And so that is a very, very scary thought for some of these small businesses. And then we have a story this week also with Facebook, which has a large engineering center in the Seattle area, more than 5,000 employees in Seattle, saying that they're extending their work from home policy through July 2021. So another full year. And you just got a feel for the cleaners, the restaurants, the pubs, the all of these small businesses that are part of these mini ecosystems around these large tech employers. And I think the fact of the matter is not everyone's going to make it, and it's going to be a different downtown that we come back to in Seattle when hopefully COVID ends. So a very interesting piece. Kurt, it was great working with you on that, and hopefully we can do some other co-reporting on stories as we go forward through these crazy times.
I agree. I think just one final point on that. I think what scares a lot of these businesses is that these big companies now are learning what it means to work from home. Frankly, they're learning that they can do it. And that long-term means that they may not need all this office space and they may not be back in their entirety. So something to watch for sure.
Absolutely. Again, check out that story. The headline is, "How long can we hold on? As Zillow workers stay remote, businesses near Seattle HQ fight to survive." So check that out on geekwire.com. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about a new trend, micro schools. Welcome back, everybody. I am John Cook, co-founder of GeekWire. I am here with Kurt Schlosser, GeekWire reporter. Kurt, I know you're in the same boat as me on this issue. You've got two young kids, one, I believe, in middle school, one in grade school. I've got a grade schooler. I know you're struggling with this as I'm struggling with this. Schooling and education. Our reporter Lisa Stifler had a really interesting piece this week talking about micro schools or pandemic pods. It's this idea that smaller groups of families are going to come together and have 4, 5, 6, 7 students work in smaller groups and essentially have a tutor work with them. And I gotta say, this is something in our family, and I'm curious where you're at, Kurt, if this has been discussed, because we're talking about, like, how are we going to enter this school year in September and make sure that our kid has some sort of education, because our attempts at online Zoom-based learning during the spring, I would rate it an F on our ability to deliver. But where are you at? I don't think we've caught up on this topic.
Yeah, I have a 13-year-old who is currently enrolled in the Xbox School of Excellence. That's about all he has been doing. And a second grader who basically is following into the bad habits of her brother and, you know, becoming a screen junkie. And, you know, as parents, my wife and I have fallen down on the job because we're trying to do our actual jobs and not be digital teachers. So it's been rough, man.
It has been rough, but there might be some bit of hope. There are a few technology companies that are coming together, including one by the name of Weekdays, which is led by Shauna Kazi, a longtime Seattle entrepreneur, who are attempting to bring this concept of micro schools to the masses, where people still stay enrolled in their public or private school, but they have access to additional teaching and educational resources. And I think this is actually a huge idea. And I think there is going to be real legs for this in the coming months and probably setting the tone for years ahead, where people are going to have additional add-on learning capabilities in front of them that augment their educational process. And Shauna Kazi, the CEO of Weekdays, had this quote in our story this week. She said, "Over the last 4 months, childcare and education has changed more abruptly than it has in the last 100 years. And I know many companies are trying to take advantage or trying to find ways to help in this very challenging situations for parents and educators. But the whole concept is, if you could create kind of a marketplace where teachers can set their rates and then find these pandemic pods or small groups of kids who are interested in learning. Now, of course, with this come all sorts of challenges, especially as it relates to equity and fairness. And our story quoted a University of Washington education professor who was making the comments that this really disadvantages students who might not be able to afford access to technology or these private tutors. So I do know that there are several families that are attempting to make sure that when they do create one of these pods or these micro schools, there's at least the ability to try to support others who might be disadvantaged to come into that. But that's just people out of their goodwill. And I'm not sure that that's a real solution for people that might not have access to these resources. But I totally agree with what Shauna Kazi is saying. And I think the entire educational system and model is getting really disrupted here. And we're just not sure how it's going to play out. Kurt, I know, you know, we're a few weeks away from when the school year is supposed to start. What are you going to do for your family as it relates to education in a few weeks?
Well, there's been a little bit of talk with neighbors about getting the kids together a little more actively around school activities. We had a tutor for a little while for my son just for math in the spring. We'll probably revisit that at least. My biggest concern is what these little pods look like for kids who get this weird sense of like, is this what school is? Where, you know, I agree with the UW professor who says that this skews away from any sort of equity or addressing issues that students have who don't have these resources.
Yeah, really, when you think about a school building, it is kind of an equalizer. I mean, you walk into those walls, and this is one of the beauties of public schools, at least, is that, you know, you have a large range of viewpoints, economic backgrounds, and there's a lot of benefits in how people interact in society based on that. So I do think that there is a technological solution here, and there are going to be services that are adopted here quickly as we try to figure this out. Because as we all know, us sitting at home as working parents, trying to be workers, parents, and school teachers is a combination that just does not work. So we're going to be tracking the educational story here closely at GeekWire, and stay tuned for more stories on this topic for sure. And finally, before we go today, Kurt, tell me about Strideline Socks, the Seattle sock maker. Why in the world was GeekWire writing about a startup that manufactures socks this week?
You know Strideline, the small Seattle company. They build themselves as the world's most comfortable sock. And maybe you've seen them around town. They have like the Seattle skyline on them, some of the designs. They're really cool, graphically printed socks that they do for certain schools or businesses or just whatever. But they got into mask making, like a lot of apparel companies did back in March when COVID hit. And it was a pivot to sort of help them avoid layoffs and prop up the business, save the business, if you will. So they ran a promotion in July with a special code so that they could send a sample mask to school administrators. And then those administrators could see and decide whether they wanted to order in bulk with special branding for their particular school. Well, they didn't put a limit on the code.
As I've done this before, where you've created a promotional code and you forget to put a limit. So I actually can understand the mistake here, but it kind of got out of hand.
Yeah, it totally got out of hand. They had $120 million worth of free masks were ordered, which they certainly couldn't fulfill. So they had to cancel all the orders and send an apologetic email to their customers, a lot of whom were teachers who got a hold of this code. And so their customers were not happy. And Strideline was embarrassed and was trying to make it up by offering a free pair of socks and so forth. And so, yeah, it was a misstep for the sock maker for sure.
Well, yes, a crazy story there with Strideline. I actually love their socks. They've been a great partner with GeekWire for many years. As many folks know, there's a great tradition at the GeekWire Summit of getting Strideline socks as one of your giveaways. And I've appreciated working with them over the years. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast. I am John Cook. And on behalf of GeekWire reporter Kurt Schlosser, thanks for tuning in today. Our podcast producer is Kurt Milton. Our theme music is by Daniel L.K. Caldwell. To see all of GeekWire's coverage of science, tech, business, and more, go to geekwire.com and be sure to sign up for our daily email newsletter to catch all of our headlines. I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook. Talk to you next time on GeekWire.